It's one of those stories from high school history class. The 1898 War for Cuban Independence, the U.S. versus Spain, Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders and the charge up San Juan Hill. It's the stuff of legend. San Juan Hill was a decisive battle of the Spanish-American War. It made Teddy Roosevelt a national hero and launched his ascent to the White House. But overlooked in that story was the role of black soldiers in capturing San Juan Hill. It was not an incidental role either. It was critical. Maryland author James Tuccilli decided to give credit where it was long overdue. He's written a book about the Buffalo soldiers who went to Cuba to fight with Roosevelt and the Rough Riders. Some overlooked American history on Midday after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, our second hour. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. 3 decades after the Civil War, most black citizens in the United States were struggling to find a way to make a living and work enough to save and maybe buy property. Their goal was to somehow enter the middle class. Many African-American men decided that enlisting in the military was one way to go, and they joined up, at first being ordered out west to fight Native Americans. When the Spanish-American War began in 1898, these black soldiers were ordered to help fight abroad alongside the Rough Riders Brigade of Theodore Roosevelt and that legend. A new book by Maryland author Jerome Tuccilli tells their story. The book is called The Roughest Riders, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers of the Spanish-American War. It was published this month by the Chicago Review Press. Jerome Tuccilli is joining us in the studio. He lives here in Maryland. It's nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And this is book number what for you? Did you lose count?
I think it's around 31 or 32. I stopped counting a while ago.
I just want to take a moment to tell our listeners a little bit about you. You moved here to Maryland. You took a job with T. Rowe Price.
Yeah, so 1994, right.
1994. You worked in finance, but you've written books about Donald Trump, to name one. And your book, Hemingway and Gellhorn, became what I thought was a very fine, I believe, HBO special,
yeah.
Special about Ernest Hemingway and...
And his third wife, Martha Gellhorn.
Yeah, with Nicole Kidman and Clive Owen, was it?
Clive Owens is right, yes,
very good.
Exactly.
And 30 books, mostly biography, mostly of the history side?
Well, I started doing books on personal finance, like how to make money in the stock market, that type of thing, and then... some publisher asked me to do a book on the Hunt family in the early 80s about the silver crash, and it turned out to be a three-generational family saga of the Hunts, and that got me into biography. And so after that, it was Donald Trump. I did the first book on him in 1985, and then Rupert Murdoch and Barry Diller and a whole Alan Greenspan, Hemingway you mentioned, the Gallo Wine family.
And did you not write a book also about what it is to be a libertarian or how you become a libertarian?
Yeah, actually it's become an underground classic. It's called It Usually Begins with Ayn Rand. And I was initially attracted to her.
Yeah.
And then I found out that I call her kind of a right-wing Marxist because she was very totalitarian within her own circles and so on. And so I got... pretty much disgusted with her group, and I wrote a satire on the whole.
Oh, I see, about how one becomes a libertarian usually begins by reading Atlas Shrugged or something. Right,
right, exactly, when you're young and impressionable.
And one last thing about the Donald Trump book, that's interesting, 1985, is that still in circulation? Do people still mention it?
Well, it went through 4 separate editions. A lot of the books that are sold now are through resellers out there. The originals are, I guess, out of print, but there is a new edition out there. And the New York Times cited it, to my surprise, about a week ago because, you know, to me it's ancient history, 1985. We're talking 30 years ago. And so these things get out there. There's no escaping.
You did all this while being a senior executive at T. Rowe Price.
Yeah, I was vice president there until August 31st.
Retired.
Just retired, yeah.
Well, congratulations on that. And on book number 31, right?
Let's call it 31. Right.
The Roughest Riders, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers in the Spanish-American War. This book just jumped out at me when we received it here at Midday. I've never heard this story. I'll tell you why. And you probably know this from high school or wherever we heard the story of Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders and saw any photographs of them or depictions of them in paintings. They were all white. They were all charging up San Juan Hill. winning a decisive victory in that Spanish-American War. I don't think we ever saw a black face associated with that story.
No, it was not even a footnote in history. you had to, well, the way I started with the subject is going back to Hemingway 80 years ago. He says every writer needs a good BS detector. And the more I heard about Teddy Roosevelt and 500 cowboys charging up San Juan Hill, chasing 10,000 Spaniards down the other side, something didn't compute. I said, something's wrong with this story. So I started doing my own research. And what it turned out to be is that the blacks saved the day for the Rough Riders. They were getting wiped out. And San Juan Hill was only one of four battles down there. Roosevelt didn't even take part in it. He arrived on the top of San Juan Hill when the fighting was over.
In time for a photograph.
And he had his hand-picked journalist along with him who were willing to perpetuate the myth of Teddy Roosevelt in return for access.
Before we get to 1898 and Cuba, let's go back a few years. Civil War ends. I mentioned here briefly with black men, the plight of black men after slavery in the United States. So let's set the scene a little bit. I'm going to call you Jerry Tuccilli because that's what your friends call you, right?
Jerry's right.
Is that okay?
That's good.
All right. So let's set the scene a little bit about black men who gravitated toward the military after the Civil War.
They gravitated to the military because that was the only way they could make a living. They were freed but not yet free in the sense that they had no access to the economy of the country. They couldn't get jobs. And it was not just down south. Even up north, a lot of white laborers resented freed blacks coming up and competing for jobs. So they joined the Army. And so the freed slaves and later their offspring were shipped out west to fight the Indians out on the plains. And they got the name Buffalo Soldiers, largely from the Cheyenne and the Comanches, who said they fought valiantly like wounded buffalo. No matter how many arrows shot them, they didn't want to die. And, of course, their appearance with the dark skin and the curly hair. So the name stuck, Buffalo Soldiers. It became a point of pride as they went on. So in between wars, they were resented by white society because they were armed. They were trained militarily, trained soldiers and so on. But there was always another war to go to. And right after the Indian Wars, of course, there was the war in Cuba, which was precipitated by the sinking of the USS Maine.
We have to go over a little bit of that history about the Spanish-American War. Actually, you might call it the War for Cuban Independence, which precipitated a war between the U.S. and Spain, right?
Well, it did. We wanted the Spanish out of the Western Hemisphere. We also had economic interests in Cuba. And there had been a long history of oppression by the Spanish against the Cubans down there. I mean, they were virtually enslaved themselves. And Teddy Roosevelt was frothing at the mouth to get into Cuba and to kick them out.
Let's talk about who he was at that point in his life.
He was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy. And when his boss went away for the weekend, Teddy Roosevelt took it upon himself to launch the Navy against the Philippines, Admiral Dewey's victory there. But
there were two things going on, right? There were the Philippines and Cuba.
And what happened in Cuba was the USS Maine was sitting in the harbor down there, and it exploded and sunk. And everybody, including the yellow press of the time, the Hearst newspapers, were blaming the Spanish for sinking the Maine. Well, it was never resolved that the Spanish did it. As a matter of fact, later investigations said it was more of an internal combustion that blew it up. But that was a good enough reason to go down to Cuba and send troops down there.
And the headline, Remember the Maine, or became the credo of that era, right?
Exactly, yes.
I wanted to just quote your book here to step back a little bit further to the 1870s, 1880s, when the Buffalo Soldiers were out west. And after the Civil War, black Americans had little or no access to the mainstream economic system of their country. Yet there was always room for them in the military. All nations need fodder for the battlefield for their ongoing campaigns to slaughter other human beings in war and the U.S. government was no exception. Of the 2 million men who put their lives at risk to preserve the Union, 10% of them were African Americans. And those who actually were served in the Civil War, did some of them become Buffalo Soldiers? I meant to ask you that.
Yeah, a lot of them did. they joined the military, the Army. There was the only major military branch open at that time to them.
And they stayed in the Army.
They stayed in the Army. And then, if, you know, we're talking about 30 years later, you know, when the Indian Wars came about, the early 1890s, their sons followed them into the Army mm-hmm. and took part in those wars.
And so when we get to 1898 and the battleship Maine sinks in Havana Harbor, right?
Yes.
And the U.S. Congress actually declares war against Spain, against Madrid.
We declared war against Spain because of the, you know, the sinking of the Maine, which we blame the Spanish for. And Roosevelt was determined to get down there and kick them out of the Western Hemisphere. He called them garlics. He didn't want the garlics in the Western Hemisphere. That was his term for them. And Mark Twain summed up Roosevelt pretty well. He said he's insane, and he's insanest on the question of war. He figured if he couldn't fight the Spanish, he'd go and fight the Japanese at the time.
Now, were the Spanish determined to hold Cuba?
Oh, absolutely. They had, just in the area of the San Juan Hill, they had 10,000 troops down there. And they were well entrenched. They had their naval forces in Santiago de Cuba harbor. But throughout the entire country, they had like 300,000 soldiers there. So they were a complete occupying force. And they kept the Cubans under the boot.
But were they also fighting a civil war? I mean, there were Cuban insurgents, right?
Oh, there were Cuban insurgents. The Cubans had been fighting the Spanish for 40, 50 years before that, trying to throw them out. And we half-heartedly defended the Cubans and gave them moral support and so on, but we never really took part down there because we had economic interests in Cuba.
So we're going to take a break here in a minute, but to set this up a little bit, the Buffaloes, how do they go from being Buffalo Soldiers to being soldiers in Cuba?
The name followed them. The Buffalo Soldiers were divided into four regiments. There was the 9th and 10th Cavalry, and then it was the 24th and 25th Infantry. And they totaled, the ones that went to Cuba totaled about 1,685 in all. And they were the ones that went down there. And later on, the term Buffalo Soldiers became more pronounced than it is now and a source of pride to the black soldiers who served there. But
they were not Rough Riders.
They were not the Rough Riders. Teddy Roosevelt recruited them.
We're going to talk about the Rough Riders when we get back, and then more on this story, the untold story of the black soldiers in the Spanish-American War, told by our guest in this hour of midday in his new book, The Roughest Riders. Our guest is Jerome Tuccilli, Tuccille. The book is published by Chicago Review Press, and it's fresh out. And we need to take a little break here because it's the WYPR membership drive here in the last day, right? The last few hours of it. Andy Beanstalk, please tell our listeners how they can show their support for this radio station. And thanks, Andy, and welcome back, everybody. We're talking with historian and author Jerome Tuccilli. Jerry Tuccilli's newest book is The Roughest Riders, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers in the Spanish-American War. This is another interesting thing we pulled from your book, that the government believed that the African Americans were better suited to the tropics and would not come down with diseases like white people did. In reality, they contracted malaria and yellow fever and other tropical maladies just like the whites did.
That's absolutely true. And it was prevailing racism of the time. They were freed as slaves, but they were still regarded as an inferior species. Not quite on the same level as white people. And why not send them to the tropics? They came from Africa, you know, and they thought they could withstand malaria and all the other diseases down there. But it proved to be a fallacy.
The black soldiers went to Cuba to help fight the Spanish-American War. But we've heard through history, most of us, it's ingrained, really, the story of the Rough Riders and Teddy Roosevelt. And I don't want to just say Rough Riders and not explain who they were and talk a little bit about them. This was a pretty interesting story in itself.
Well, Roosevelt gave up his job as Assistant Secretary of the Navy, and he went down to San Antonio to recruit volunteers to fight with him in the war in Cuba. And they were mostly cowboys. He got about 1,000 of them that he found down there. They're mostly cowboys, bronco busters. Some of them were gunslingers, barroom brawlers, whatever. And he also had a handful of blue bloods from places like Harvard and Yale, basically from his own class and so on. And the press, Roosevelt was a great copy because he was a Hemingway type before Hemingway, larger than life, a hunter, a conservationist and so on. So they call him Roosevelt's Rough Riders. And he actually didn't even lead them at the time. Leonard Wood was his superior officer, but Wood's Rough Riders didn't quite make it, so it became Roosevelt's Rough Riders. And about half of them actually were sent to Cuba.
And he recruited them specifically for the Spanish-American War.
For the Spanish-American War in Cuba, yeah. And about 500 of them went with Roosevelt to fight the Spanish in Cuba.
But the Buffalo soldiers, or the black soldiers who went down there, you said four units, right?
There were four.
Infantry and cavalry.
There were two cavalry, the 9th and 10th, and two infantry.
They were not part of the Rough Riders.
They were not. I call them the Roughest Riders because they basically saved Roosevelt on several of the hills.
There's two that I want to talk about today with you. That would be San Juan Hill, the famous one, and Kettle Hill nearby, right?
Right.
So let's talk about this a little bit, Jerry. Why, first of all, why San Juan Hill? Why was that such a decisive battle in this war, which lasted, what, about 10 weeks or so? It wasn't that long, was it?
No, it wasn't that long. It was the final battle down there, so it became the pivotal battle, the one that captured the public imagination, the American troops, and chasing the Spanish finally off the hills. But there were actually three preceding hills, and Roosevelt took part in only one of those. The first one was called Las Guasimas, which was named after the trees on the hill. Roosevelt led 500 of his Rough Riders into an ambush, and there was heavy machine gun fire and rifle fire coming down from the Spanish on the top of the hill. He lost a third of his men. So he went from 500 down to, let's say, 350 of his Rough Riders. The 25th Black Infantry came over and saved the day for Roosevelt. They said if the blacks had not showed up there, he would have been wiped out. That was the first battle. The second battle was a hill called El Cane, and that took place a week later. And the Black 25th, actually, after a 10-hour-long grueling battle against superior Spanish forces with greater firepower, the blacks charged up that hill and took the hill and planted their guidon on the top. Roosevelt's Rough Riders were assigned to take Kettle Hill, which was a smaller hill to the just slightly north of San Juan Hill. And he took a lot of heavy damage. He was actually smarting. He was ticked off because he wasn't assigned to what he knew would be the final battle, San Juan Hill. But he was assigned to Kettle Hill. He followed orders. On the way up, he was one of the few people on horseback. You know, they call them cavalry and infantry regiments. But the reality was they were all infantry down there, except for a few of the officers, including Roosevelt, who was on horseback.
I was going to ask you that. When you mentioned that there were two black units of cavalry, were any of them actually on horses?
No, none of them were mounted, no. Roosevelt's horse got snagged in barbed wire on the way up Kettle Hill. He lost 90% of his men charging up Kettle Hill. He was down to about 55 of the 500 that he started with. He was bailed out there by troops under the command of General Black Jack Pershing, the 10th so-called cavalry, who charged up, rescued the Rough Riders, and there were white regulars, too, along with them. And I'd like to make clear there was a lot of rivalry between the regulars and the volunteers like Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And the blacks got up there first, and they planted their guide on
Kettle Hill.
On Kettle Hill. From the top of Kettle Hill, they can see the action taking place on San Juan Hill. And The Black Ninth and 24th were largely instrumental in leading the charge up on San Juan Hill. And Roosevelt, with the handful of Rough Riders that he had left, went charging up there as fast as he could get there. But he didn't arrive until the fighting was over. But he had his entourage of handpicked reporters waiting up there for the photo op. So, as received legend, this is that Roosevelt and his Rough Riders took San Juan Hill, but they didn't get there, as I said, until the fighting was over.
And mostly black soldiers.
And the black soldiers were instrumental.
Were instrumental in this decisive, you say, final big battle of
victory.
So the press at the time, I guess they liked the story. They liked the Roosevelt story. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the press was as prejudiced as anybody else at the time. Were there any reporters assigned to the black units?
There was one, a guy named Herschel Cashin.
One to cover all of them?
Yeah.
What was his name?
Herschel Cashin, C-A-S-H-I-N. He was the only reporter down there covering the black troops and a lot of the white regulars as well. There were six leading reporters of the day who like Herbert Marshall was a name, was one of them. There were a few others who were loyal to Roosevelt. He made good copy. He gave them access. But they knew they had to puff up the Roosevelt image if they wanted to keep that access and so on. So they were there waiting for Roosevelt and to create the myth and perpetuate the myth about how he took San Juan Hill almost on his own, the way it came out.
Jerry Tuccilli is our guest in this hour of Midday. The Roughest Riders is the name of his book, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers in the Spanish-American War. Well, did anybody besides, you said Cashin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Besides him, do any reporting on this? Or, I mean, when you went and did your research, did anybody give black soldiers credit for anything with regard to San Juan Hill? I mean, at the time, I mean, within the first year, 5 years, 10 years after this battle.
Well, actually, Roosevelt initially did. Even in his book, The Rough Riders, he said that the blacks fought valiantly, they were courageous and so on. But he softened that by saying, but they did so because they were led by white officers. And then later on, he even went back on that a little bit, and he said, well, a lot of them were cowards, and he had to pull his gun to keep them from charging back to the base. You know, the
well,
base.
I didn't want you to gloss over that, because that's significant. I mean, he actually turned against the story of the black soldiers having any contribution to this.
He did, because word was getting out, and there was a black press at the time, too, and they were promoting the success of the blacks down there, and other reporters were, after the war was over, within the next year or two, we're talking about the role that the blacks played. Roosevelt at that time had very strong political ambitions. He didn't want the competition from blacks getting any more glory than he did. So he actually turned against them. This line he used, that they did as well as they did because they had white officers. Well, of course they had white officers. They weren't allowed to have black officers. So they had to fight under whites, including Black Jack Pershing.
I said at the outset of the show that, in my memory, any photograph from San Juan Hill or any oil painting depiction of that battle, there were always white faces. I don't remember ever seeing black faces associated with those images. But the cover of your book, The Roughest Riders, shows black soldiers in, the army uniform of the time, engage in a war in the tropics in Cuba. Can you tell us a little bit about that? This wasn't done just for your book. This is something from the archives?
It came from the Library of Congress. A lot of the truth of what happened is available through places like the National Archives, Library of Congress, and a lot of old articles and journals that are out there, but it's kind of buried. A lot of the history is also available at the Presidium in San Francisco. In fact, one of my sources on the book was a fellow I met there, Frederick Penn, who was a National Park Ranger, who's in charge of the Buffalo Soldier Project out at the Presidio in San Francisco. And there are 450 of these black soldiers buried out there, but they're scattered. And his job is to identify their graves and so on.
Hmm.
So as you, and at the back of my book has got all kinds of documentation. I've got, there are all kinds of articles from Library of Congress, National Park Service, et cetera.
I guess I was wondering, as time went by, more credit was given to the black soldiers for their contribution in this battle, and who led that. Maybe we'll do that after the break, talk a little bit about that. And you can join us if you have a question for our guest at this point in the hour. You're welcome to give us a ring. Jerry Tuccilli lives in Severna Park in Anne Arundel County. Joining us today, we talk about his 31st book, The Roughest Riders, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers in the Spanish-American War. A short break here on Midday again as we ask you to consider making a donation to WYPR, or if you're a sustaining member, continue. Please continue to show your support for public radio and this radio station. Here's Andy Bienstock. And welcome back, everybody. Dan Rodericks here with Jerry Tuccilli, who we're just meeting for the first time today with his book, The Roughest Riders, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers in the Spanish-American War. So I was asking you about, you know, time going by and people taking another look at the history of San Juan Hill and the Spanish-American War, Teddy Roosevelt, the Rough Riders, and these soldiers, these black soldiers, where do you see in our history since then, because it's more than 100 years ago, where do you see credit start, you know, being given to them, either officially through our government or just in other writers or journalists?
Well, 1948, President Truman integrated the military. No more segregation after that. All through World War II, of course, we had black troops and we had the white troops. And there were segregated units. It took a few years for full integration to come into existence. But they were really put on the map around 1993 when Colin Powell, who was, you know, a black general, who was jogging down in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, saw that there were a couple of dingy little alleys with the references to the Buffalo soldiers there, and he decided that he was going to build a monument in their memory. And he had very stirring words, which I quoted in the beginning of the book. He was down there for the dedication. He put them on the map. In fact, I sent him a copy of the book. He sent me a very nice letter in return for that. He was the one who really put them on the map. And I think more of it's getting out there now.
Was he specific to the Buffalo soldiers in the West or those that also went to Cuba?
Oh, the Buffalo soldiers in general. I mean, they were really known as the Buffalo soldiers up until the time that the army was, and the military in general, was integrated. They, you know, the name stuck with them and so on. And Powell, of course, was very sympathetic to the cause, being a black man himself.
I just want to go back to San Juan Hill for one moment and just recapture that. So when we say that the black soldiers, these units, cavalry and infantry, were really critical to the success there against the Spanish, could you talk a little bit more about what exactly they did?
Well, what they did was they fought alongside the white regulars. So these were regular troops, regular army, and so on. But they were instrumental on every single hill in leading the charge to the top. And they, as I said before, they fought under white generals, and they were pushed to the forefront. They took the heaviest losses. You know, they had 1,685 altogether. They lost 17% of their men. The whites lost about 10% of them, of their men. So they were maneuvered into positions so that they can get up the hill, and they were in great shape, great infantrymen and so on, so that they would be in the advance columns on every single hill.
The president at the time was McKinley.
Yeah, William McKinley.
And right. Teddy Roosevelt came out of the Spanish-American War a superstar in the United States, really. And this kind of launched him. He became vice president?
He became vice president under McKinley, and McKinley was assassinated. Teddy Roosevelt ascended to the presidency. He ran again in 1904 and won.
And he was always associated with this story. People always saw him on horseback with the Rough Riders.
Well, because that was the romantic image of Roosevelt, with the campaign hat on, the jodhpurs, the big mustache that he wore. You know, the man of action, the hunter, the fisherman, the outdoorsman, and so on. And that was the image that the public loved about Roosevelt. But the story of San Juan Hill was essentially buried at the time, and the blacks were never given credit for it.
What became to the black soldiers who came home from Cuba in that war? Were you able to trace any of their lives?
Well, what happened to them was as they returned to civilian life between wars, the lynchings continued down south. They were strung up. It was almost like a Roman Colosseum. It was not, you know, we talk about the lynchings in the dead of night where they string somebody up because of an alleged rape or that type of thing. A lot of this was sport, the blood sport, where they were strung up in broad daylight from the nearest tree with a crowd of whites, you know, applauding and around them and so on. They were feared after they left the military because they were, as I said, they were trained soldiers. They were well-armed. They knew how to use their weapons and so on. But again, another war came along, and we needed more fodder.
We needed to chase Pancho Villa, too, right?
Yeah, 1916.
In Mexico. When was that, 1916?
Yeah, we chased him around for 9 months without catching him down there.
And the black soldiers were used then as well?
They did. They were used down there. And Black Jack Pershing was one of the generals who led them. And Patton, who was a lower-ranking officer at the time, George Patton, was part of that story. He was frothing at the mouth to get into the action. And we wanted to catch Pancho Villa, and but he outmaneuvered us with guerrilla tactics for about 9 months. And then finally... conditions in Europe, with outset of World War One, took precedence in the headlines and so on, and we decided to pull the plug on the operation in Cuba. And
In Mexico.
I'm sorry, in Mexico, Mexico. Yes.
Black Jack Pershing, as you mentioned him, John Pershing, General Pershing, had some interesting comments, well, sort of disgusting comments, really, about black soldiers, referring to them as a constant menace to American society. I think you write in the book that he wrote that to President Wilson. He says, we must not eat with them, must not shake hands or seek to talk or meet with them outside of the requirements of military service.
Yeah. Pershing had a mixed history on this. He got the name Black Jack in the first place because he praised the black troops under his command. He thought that they were great warriors. White society kind of resented him in the beginning. That's why they call him Black Jack. That's where the name came from, because of his association with the black troops. But that doesn't mean that he thought of them as equals. He just thought of them as warriors, people who could be led into battle and do a good job. And he showed his true stripes on his racial attitudes later on when he came out with those comments that you just quoted. And he even tried them on the French later on when he talked about the black troops were sending over to Europe, and the French dismissed them out of hand, you know, because they had black troops, their own blacks in their own army over there who they fought alongside of and thought nothing of it.
It must have been, I'm just suggesting this, disappointing for you to read that Teddy Roosevelt, whose career really got launched on San Juan Hill and should owe something to the black soldiers, turned against them. We were talking about this earlier. How his comments changed and actually became quite prejudiced against the blacks.
They did. He was a man of his times. He was, racial attitudes in this country. We have a very sorry history of racial relations in this country, and he was no different. Very few white people at the time were enlightened enough to think of blacks as equals.
I guess we think of him as a progressive, right? It was a progressive era, Theodore Roosevelt. I say that you must have been disappointed to read it. It is kind of disappointing to read that he would turn against them, change his story about their role in all of that, right?
Yeah, we think of him as a progressive, well, because he ran as a progressive third-party candidate, which they call the Bull Moose Party, because he called himself a bull moose. But it was actually the Progressive Party, and he was a trust buster, so that's where he got his progressive label from.
It wasn't because of race relations.
No, it didn't spill over onto his attitudes about dark people.
Jerry, what was the most interesting thing you discovered along the way in doing this? And you must be glad you did this story.
Well, I am. And I started, as I said, my own BS detector started to quiver when I heard about 500 Rough Riders chasing 10,000 Spanish out of Cuba. And I started to do the research into the book. And I mean, I was up to this went on for quite a few years, 3 or 4 years. And I put it aside. And actually, my wife said to me, you ought to pick up that story again. It's a great story and nobody's telling it. So I went back to it. I was between books. I went back to it and I really got my teeth into it and gave it to my agent and she wound up selling it. So the disappointments for me were the discovering that some of our heroes were the feet of clay. You know, Roosevelt being one, you know, he's one of the four faces on Mount Rushmore. Feet of clay and General, Blackjack Pershing, with his attitude. So as you research a book like this and get into it, you start to realize that people are pretty complicated. They're complex human beings, and they nobody's perfect. Nobody's all black and white, except in racial terms, maybe.
Mm. And it's hard to rise above your times?
And it is. Going back in history, you think of Cicero as being an enlightened Roman, but he had slaves. He was a man of his times. Prevailing attitudes.
I want to take a quick call for Jerry Tuccilli here in the last couple of minutes of our hour with him. The book is called The Roughest Riders, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers in the Spanish-American War. Milton, one of our listeners in Edgewood, wanted to speak to you, Mr. Tuccilli. Go right ahead, Milton.
Thanks first to you, Dan, for having shows like this and this particular one. And thank you, Mr. Jerome Tuccilli. Tuccilli, is that right?
Tuccilli,
that's right,
yeah.
Exactly right.
Thank you, because, we wait for guys like you to dig out some of the stuff that's been buried, and I just want to express my appreciation before this show goes off. I haven't heard any more calls. There may be some, but I wanted to say thank you and also emphasize one more thing, since this is Pledge Week and all that. This is why it's worth it to me to be a member.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Milton. Everyone here at WYPR appreciates that comment.
Yeah, and I do too. Thank you.
Yeah. Jerry, we're at the end of our time here. One last thing about I can't resist asking you about the Donald Trump, since you wrote a biography of him. We only got about a minute, so I can't resist asking you about this. Knowing what you did back then, I mean, it was 30 years ago you wrote that book, but following him since then and seeing him now, what is your reaction to his ascendancy here?
I think of him as an American version of Vladimir Putin. Two guys that could sit down like the two capo di tutti capis, the heads of two mafia clans, sitting down and dividing up the territory among themselves. Mm-hmm. He's probably as tough as Putin and so on. I'm stunned.
And sort of oblivious to criticism, too, right?
Oh, he is. He just bulls ahead and goes his own way and says what he – so far he's gotten away with.
Was he like that 30 years ago?
Well, no. He was – when I wrote about him, he was, 39 years old. He was just starting to become the blustery autocrat that he is today.
Jerome Tuccilli, Jerry Tuccilli, author of more than 30 books, including Hemingway and Gellhorn, Gallo – Be Thy Name, the story of the Gallo wine empire.
The wine family, right?
Yep. And Trump, and he's taught at the New School for Social Research in New York City, lives here in Maryland. He just recently retired from T. Rowe Price. And the book we've been discussing is The Roughest Riders, The Untold Story of the Black Soldiers in the Spanish-American War. Really interesting, and glad to have you with us today, Jerry. Thank you very much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our midday for today. We hope you enjoyed the program and come back again tomorrow. Tomorrow on the show, Police Commissioner of Baltimore, Kevin Davis, will be our guest in the first hour of the show. So please come back for that. Have a great afternoon. But if you haven't made a pledge and you liked what you just heard or you like other programming here on WYPR, why not become a supporter of WYPR? Here's Andy Bienstock.